Welcome to Season 3, Episode 2 of the Innovation Muse, a podcast dedicated to educating and inspiring you become a more powerful innovator. I'm Ankush Chopra, your host. The season is titled Lessons from Management Research. In the season, we aim to bring some of the most interesting research on strategy and innovation and make it applicable for business managers. In this episode, we will discuss a critical innovation type known as radical innovation. Often, when a radically new technology arises, it can lead to the disruption of firms. In this episode, we will explore the literature to find the antidote to radical innovations. You will take away a few lessons in how to not get disrupted by radical innovation. Did you know that before disruptive innovations became a rage, radical innovations were the known innovation type that disrupted companies? That is the reason that most people still think that massive technological change often leads to the failure of incumbent firms. Radical innovations are those innovations that arise from a radically new knowledge base. So if the knowledge base used in a new product is very different from that used in an existing product, then that is a radical innovation. Consider the light bulb. It used to be a tungsten wire which lit up when electricity was passed through it. It was enclosed in a vacuum-sealed glass to prevent oxidization. And that was all the technology needed in the light bulb. But now we have light-emitting diode technology, or the LED lighting. LED is a semiconductor and it requires deep understanding of electronics. It has not only a vast knowledge base, but also that knowledge base is radically different from the knowledge base in incandescent bulbs. So that is a radical technology. Similarly, the old photographic film was a chemical-coated film that, when exposed to light, would capture an image. It involved deep chemical knowledge. But in the digital camera, there is no chemical knowledge needed. It involves knowledge of microelectronics. So it is a radical technology or a radical innovation. Such innovations are not only radically different, but also a major challenge for the incumbent firms. Luckily, hundreds of scholars have dedicated their research to understanding radical innovations. Let's explore what the literature has to teach us about radical innovations. There are hundreds of papers on radical innovations in the literature. As in the previous episode, instead of talking about specific papers, I will focus on the key lessons from these papers. You can always find the citations of some of the most important papers from the show notes. So here are the key lessons. The first major lesson from the literature is that radical innovations provide massive rewards. That is the reason why firms pursue them. Electric car is a radical innovation that uses a novel knowledge base. The rewards of such innovations can be seen with the rise of Tesla. You know, Tesla is now valued at over $50 billion with a B. It is now valued as much as General Motors and Ford. Tesla is not even a 15-year-old company. So this is an example of the rewards of radical innovation. These rewards ensue because such innovations provide a massive value to customers and thus reap the rewards of that value creation. But at the same time, the risks involved with radical innovations are also very high. Here is an example to show the risks of radical innovation. in 1968 when Mattson and Wolpenhine, two researchers with Procter & Gamble, began working on a cooking fat substitute, they knew they were on to something big. By 1987, P&G had named this substance Olestra and received an FDA approval to use it as a fat substitute. Olestra was the single most important development in the history of food industry, according to a Drexel Burnham Lambert stock analyst. What else would you expect from a fat-free oil? The promise was immense. You know, you could gulp down packets of potato chips and not only avoid the guilt, but also see no effect on your gut. P&G spent hundreds of millions on setting up the manufacturing facilities for this revolutionary product and in the R&D for this project. However, by 1997, there were reports of over 1,000 adverse reactions from Olestra, from severe diarrhea and fecal incontinence to abdominal cramps. Soon after, FDA required that Olestra-containing foods have a label warning, which said Olestra may cause loose stools and abdominal cramping. In 2002, P&G eventually sold the Olestra plant and the rights to the technology to Twin River Technology at a substantial loss. While the promise of Olestra was over $1 billion in sales every year, the end result was a loss of over $300 million. In short, such innovations have high risks and high rewards. The second lesson from the literature is that failure with a radical innovation can lead to disruption of incumbent firms. If a new firm comes up with a radical innovation, and assuming it succeeds in the market, but you cannot incorporate that innovation in your product offerings, there is a high likelihood that you may get disrupted. If we go back to the emergence of early automobiles, we can see that it was a radically new technology compared to the horse and buggy technology that existed back then. Automobiles led to the disruption of horse and buggy makers who could not incorporate the new technology and adapt to it. I have talked about this in a much more detail in my podcast episode 4 of season 1. That episode takes you through the broader area of informative barriers to innovation. The third lesson from the literature is around why radical innovations are so hard to deal with. And that brings us to a critical concept of absorptive capacity. Absorptive capacity refers to a firm's ability to value new information, assimilate it, and use it for commercial purposes. Visualize how water falls on a marble. Not a drop is absorbed by the stone. On the other hand, visualize the same water falling on kitchen paper. If new information falls on a firm, but the firm cannot value it, assimilate it, and use it, the absorptive capacity of the firm is almost nil for that kind of information. This is at the heart of why firms find it hard to deal with radical innovation. Let's understand this concept in a little more detail in the next segment. The reason why a firm will find it hard to incorporate a new technology in its product offerings is that it doesn't have enough absorptive capacity for that technology. Let's unpack this concept a little to understand it better. The first thing to understand is that all learning is associative and cumulative. In order to understand advanced concepts, you need to have a solid base before that. Without understanding concepts like algebra, one may find it really hard to understand more advanced concepts like calculus. So, in order to value and absorb new knowledge, you need some basic knowledge first. And what this means is that you need to have extensive exposure rather than brief or sporadic exposure to a knowledge area. Without that, you are like that marble that absorbs no water. The second important piece of absorptive capacity is that organizational absorptive capacity is different from an individual absorptive capacity. Let me give you an example. I met a CEO of a major medical device company as a part of my recent research, and he shared an interesting story that illustrates this point. This company works in female fertility area. More recently, they were considering entering male fertility domain. One of the devices they were thinking was of a sperm count device. They had some market projections, but then the CEO was not very sure about whether those projections would pan out or whether they were too optimistic. The medical affairs team for that company does basic competitive intelligence and market intelligence work. As a part of this work, they often gather new information, including new patents and new research papers, with the rest of the organization. In the latest email from the medical affairs team, the CEO saw a reference to a research paper that found a link between low sperm count and cancer risk. It was one of those dozens of medical affairs emails that came to him. And this particular one was hidden between, you know, those dozens of them. Now, the medical affairs team sends emails to people they thought that particular information was relevant for. And when he saw this email, he immediately sent it to the person managing the male fertility device projections and told him to triple the revenue projections. And you can understand why, because now the need for this particular product was not just in fertility, but also in estimating or predicting cancer. The CEO had very high absorptive capacity to understand the value of this information. But the rest of the organization didn't have it. As a result, if he had missed this email, the organization may not have absorbed this valuable information in time. This is a really good example to understand the difference between individual and organizational absorptive capacity. I also discussed the difference between individual and organizational capabilities in an earlier episode of this podcast. If you like to hear that podcast, you can refer to episode 10 of season 2. It is titled "A Key Weapon of the Strategist: Organizational Capabilities." Another important aspect of absorptive capacity is that it is path dependent. What that means is that an organization's ability to assimilate new knowledge depends on what specific investment path it had followed. In other words, if you don't invest in a new technology area early on, you may eventually be locked out of it. Let me give you an example. Now, back in 1969, General Electric asked a very high-powered team of managers to make a decision around which businesses to keep and which ones to get out of among three critical business areas. These three business areas were computers, jet engines, and nuclear power. The team came back with recommendations that GE should get out of computers. That was in 1969. And by the time the PC revolution took place a few years later, GE was locked out of that domain. And why was that? It was simply because GE stopped investing in that area and it had built no absorptive capacity, and therefore it could not participate in the PC revolution. This was all about radical innovation and how absorptive capacity is at the heart of dealing with such innovations. Let's examine how you can use these research lessons in your business in the next segment. Based on the lessons of research in the previous segment, what actionable insights can you take away to make your business better? Well, here are a few important ones for you. The first lesson is all about dealing with radical innovation. How do you ensure that you won't get disrupted by a radical innovation? The answer lies in your upfront investments in building absorptive capacity. Since you build absorptive capacity by doing rather than anything else, your small investments in the front end of innovation will come to help you down the line. Some firms use acquisitions to fill any hole in a technology portfolio. Cisco is a prime example of this phenomenon. But it is critical to know that Cisco cannot acquire the needed technologies without keeping track of the overall domain knowledge. So even if you are going to rely on acquisitions to deal with challenges of radical innovation, you will need to have the appropriate absorptive capacity to know which acquisitions will you need. So if you do not have a formal approach to front end of innovation, you need to start building that. But if you already have one, you may want to ensure that knowledge structures and knowledge mapping of technology space is a critical part of the work that team does. Second, other than technology mapping of the existing space, you will also need to know which adjacent or unrelated spaces you need to become aware of. For this exercise, you need to know the various changes that are possible in your industry. In my first book, The Dark Side of Innovation, I developed a cascading change model, which I used again in the second book, A 60 Minutes Guide to Disruption. That model allows you to predict which changes are coming to your industry. Such a model can help you identify unrelated and adjacent spaces to build absorptive capacity that you will need down the line. Third, you may have already picked up from the discussion that continuity in a job would lead to deeper absorptive capacity in an area. But job rotation would lead to broadening of the absorptive capacity. So there is a trade-off between the two. When your innovation needs deeper absorptive capacity, continuity should be the key principle. But when innovation needs connecting the dots across areas, job rotation would become more helpful. But beyond the deep or broad knowledge accumulation, job rotation also helps people understand the knowledge structures within the firm. That means one gets to know whom to talk to get the relevant information. In short, you can use job rotation as an innovation tool when viewing the world from the lens of absorptive capacity. And finally, you need systems and processes to ensure that knowledge within the firm is being propagated in a way that organization is building the needed absorptive capacity. By propagating the knowledge within, you will help many people start to value and understand new knowledge. And this will help build organizational absorptive capacity. And this is why you need some sort of knowledge management or innovation management system. Stepping back, the key actionable lessons from this episode on radical innovation are as follows. Number one, you need a systemic approach to front end of innovation in your organization. Number two, you can use cascading change model to identify areas in which you need to build absorptive capacity right now. The model is detailed in my two books, The Dark Side of Innovation and in a 60-minute guide to disruption. Number three, you need to use job rotation as a tool for building absorptive capacity. This is where human resources are intricately involved with innovation initiatives in your organization. And finally, number four, you need knowledge and innovation management systems to build greater absorptive capacity in your organization. So this was all that I had for you in this episode. I am signing off now, and I'll see you next week with a new episode. Bye until then.